Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Of you who listen to the program know that when you hear that music, normally something bad's about to happen. That means that hate is in the air. That's not exactly why I'm playing it today. Joining me from a new website devoted to veterans issues is Tyler Jones, former member of the United States Army Rangers. And so, Tyler, first of all, welcome to All Marine Radio.
Thanks for having me on. I hope I don't live up to the bad guy music.
Well, you are from the Army, so that's like a one step down the wrong trail. But we love the Rangers, man. We love the Rangers, so you'll at least get a chance to screw it up. Most will not.
I appreciate it. Yeah, a little bit of goodwill right up front might just be enough to get me out.
I had an opportunity to serve not with, but adjacent to the Rangers in 2006 around Fallujah in Iraq, and walked away from that experience incredibly impressed with the professionalism of the Rangers and the way they did business and their thoroughness, their attention to detail, their being team players, and just had a great every time I interacted with them. And they were great. So, much goodwill and love for the Ranger community.
Hey, I appreciate it. I mean, the things you listed are definitely things that we always sought to, you know, make top priorities. And so to hear that those were exemplified and observable, that's awesome. That's really exciting. I actually never really got to serve with any Marines, but, everybody that I know who has, well, let's just put it this way. When we talk about how good the Rangers are, we're always trying to differentiate ourselves from some of the bad experiences in everyday Army, and I don't think that really exists in the Marine Corps. You know, you guys are always, you know, your basic level Marine just has a little bit of extra pride and care and training, and that really shows. So
I think it's the way we market our boot camp, though. That keeps the faint of heart away. It's like, well, you could do either that one or that one. Their boot camp is probably something you really don't want to do because it's not pleasant. Theirs you could probably do. So I think the mythology, some of it, and some of the reality of our boot camp does us well. Because Marine Corps boot camp is legendary, and we like it that way. And we like that it's terrifying, and we like that you show up in the middle of the night. And I think that that's a little bit scary for some people. But the Rangers don't have that problem. You guys get to pick from a huge force. And as I said, my experience, and I don't mean guys who went to Ranger school. I mean guys serving in the Ranger Regiment, Ranger Battalions, and you get a chance to deal with those guys, and it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive. So so that's really why you're on the show today, just so you know.
Oh, well, hey, I'll take it. And I'm glad that we're doing such a good job, you know, communicating that out. That piece you meant about the boot camp marketing, I totally agree with that. I remember when I was, you know, searching around, thinking about enlisting, you know, I kind of knew I wanted to do something in special operations, and that kind of led me down the Army route. It's like right. get in a contract, but if you look at the websites and the videos and the way that they talk about the boot camp process, you know, for the Army, it's about job skills and training and you get to learn stuff. And for the Marines, it's a totally different story. So
maybe you could be one of us, the few, yeah. The proud. Yeah. Yeah. We don't promise you shit, you know, all that. And not all of it's like true, but it's awesome marketing. It does serve us in good stead, honestly. The people that choose door number four, it's an interesting group, and it's a great group to go to war with. So, marketing. Let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in the Twin Cities area in Minnesota. So, it's where I live now, too, but I spent my whole life here. I graduated high school and went to
Where'd you go to high school? I'm familiar with the Twin Cities. I lived up in North Dakota for a number of years. Born and raised in California, moved my family up there, and lived in Grand Forks, North Dakota, the home of the University of North Dakota. So I'm familiar with the Twin Cities because of the hockey rivalry between the University of North Dakota and the University of Minnesota, which is one of the greatest hockey rivalries in all of NCAA hockey, if not the best one. What high school did you go to down there?
I went to Lakeville South, so South Metro area.
Yeah. There you have it. Now, did you contemplate going to college? Did you go to college? How did the Rangers get into your vision block as a young guy?
Yeah, well, I kind of think I was always predisposed and heading down some sort of path like that. I don't have a huge military tradition in my family, but
yeah, where does that come from? I mean, no pictures hanging on the wall? Or how did you, because normally that is the way, is right? There's pictures hanging on the wall, an uncle served, a brother served, somebody served and kind of introduced you. So where did it come from?
Yeah, so my dad did serve, he was in the Air Force, and then he was in the Army Reserve Infantry when they moved up to Minnesota. So I got a little bit from him, but I think I was just always drawn to it, both from like the discipline and the uniforms, things like that, to just love of outdoors and kind of just a fascination with a lifestyle that wasn't normal. I think that's kind of all those things kind of led to the emergence of that.
Now, are you a normal Minnesota kid, which means kind of grew up with a fishing rod in one hand and a shotgun in another? Are you that guy?
A little bit. So I definitely was pretty heavily involved in organizations like Boy Scouts. And so, yeah, definitely grew up camping and fishing and shooting shotguns, things like that. Just like you said, that being said, too, I'm from a, big city suburb. So definitely not from a huge rural area or anything like that. So kind of borderline between the two, the urban and rural lifestyle.
Okay. Is there a better lake fish to eat than walleye?
No, definitely not.
It's a fact. It's not. There is not. There's no better lake fish in the world to eat than walleye. If you've never had it, you have.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, it doesn't compare. You got to come up here, get in some nice cold glacial lakes, pull some fish out, really give it a try.
Yeah, walleye is. I hadn't had it, and then I moved up there, and then people said, "Oh, have you had the walleye here?" No, I've never had it, and I am now a devotee of the walleye from the state of Minnesota.
So, yeah, do they have what kind of fish do you pull out of lakes in California?
We don't. Well, trout.
trout.
Yeah, rainbow trout. So you'll see that a lot. But I've always been a fan of the walleye. Now, are you a Minnesota kid? Are you a hockey player?
And no, I'm not a hockey player, actually. Just never got into it. I mean, I'm a fan of the game and obviously follow the rivalries. I mean, high school hockey here is like high school football in Texas, so it's a big deal. But never really played myself. So my part of it is my dad is from Missouri. So
he's a cowboy.
Yeah, so he didn't have quite the same, he didn't grow up with it, so... I just didn't get quite as into that, other than spectating, but.
Got it. All right. So you're rolling around as a Boy Scout and do you read Special Forces stuff growing up as a kid? My dad was in the Army, but he played baseball. My uncle was in the Army, but he played, he was in the Army, post World War II Germany. There was no fighting going on, so he went over and did his thing in Germany and then came home. So I really didn't have anybody in my immediate family that was in the Marine Corps or the military. They both served their 2 years and got out. But I like you. I read all the time. I watched movies. I was really curious about it. And then when I got out of college, kind of thought, I think I'd enjoy doing that. Your path a lot the same way?
Yeah, pretty similar. So like you mentioned, I definitely was a big reader when I was a kid. And I think, even though my dad, he definitely spent with active duty and reserves, you know, 8 years in the military, even though he wasn't doing anything special operations related, I think that he always kind of, one, pushed me to be the best and to search that out in things that I tried to bring into my life. Right. And then number two, also, you know, whenever I would have interest in military things, would kind of push me in that direction, just to read about the people who, you know, might be involved in actual action during, you know, quote, peacetime, et cetera, or just because it's, you know, interesting. And so I actually ended up reading a lot of, you know, you have like the Dick Couch books that he writes about different special operations recruitment pipelines, things right. like that. So I read a ton of books like that when I was growing up, and I think really having a clear picture in my head about what it would be like to go through some of those processes and have some of those experience made me want it a lot more. And yeah, I think it was kind of just burning in the back of my head probably for a lot longer than I even realized until I decided that, you know, something I had to do and pull the trigger on it.
Talk to us about, I'm not familiar with the recruiting process and the contracting process about to get to the Rangers. I mean, I'll give you my understanding and you can correct it. My understanding is that, you know, you join the Army, you test into the Rangers. Do they have guarantees that you'll go special operations? How does that work? And again, my understanding is that the Army, different than the SEALs, you can join the SEALs with a contract to go SEAL. The Army, can you get a contract that takes you to the Rangers or to, you know, in the pipeline to go to Delta Force? Explain that contracting process.
Yeah, so there's a lot more control in the Army than there would be, I know, for your specific job than in the Marine Corps. So, you know, when you're enlisting in the Army, you show up, and the first thing you're going to do with your recruiter is he'll talk to you about your interests, but you're also going to take a, you know, test ASVAB, you know, not the official one, but kind of get your approximated score so they can see what kind of job opportunities they actually have for you.
Right.
You know, you get to pick an MOS in the Army, so you'll know that you'll go to basic training, and then after that you'll go to your, it's called, I believe it's still called this, it's called AIT, or Advanced Individual Training,
right.
Where they'll actually train you up for your specific job. So you're going to pick all that ahead of time. As far as people who want to go into special operations, there are ways that you can get that in your contract right away. So for me specifically, you know, I knew that I at least wanted a shot at something like the Ranger Regiment when I enlisted. You know, that was my mission. That's what I set out to do. And so I was able to get a slot to the Ranger Assessment and Selection Program in my contract. So for any hopefuls out there, if you're going to go enlist in the Army, for whatever job you want, if there's a slot in the Ranger Regiment for that MOS or that occupational specialty, you want to get what's called an option 40 on your contract, which guarantees you that slot as long as you graduate AIT and you graduate airborne school.
Okay, so it's dependent on your, obviously you got to pass the training in order to get that slot.
Yep, yeah, you have to pass the training to get assigned to the unit. Another couple things that go in is you think you need a 110 GT score on the ASVAB and the ability to get a secret government clearance. So
got it.
Some of those things will happen either while you're in basic training as far as the clearance goes, or, you know, you have to be able to get that ASVAB score when you enlist.
Right.
But as long as you can meet those standards, you can get that in your contract. And again, that's not just for infantrymen. You know, that was my MOS. But, you know, there's a whole intelligence battalion in the Ranger Regiment, everybody from, you know, support such as chefs or parachute riggers. So there's a lot of ways to serve with an elite unit if you're thinking about the Ranger Regiment than just being on the line.
There's really not, but I understand.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. Everybody needs the rest of them too. So you sign up and you're contracted to go to the Ranger Regiment, or are you contracted to get Ranger training, go to jump school, and because there's a huge difference in the Army between having a Ranger tab that says I went to school and wearing that tab on your shoulder, which says I was in the unit. Yes?
Yeah, so definitely. So when you get the option 40 contract when you enlist, or, you know, if you just go to basic training as an infantryman, you know, you might get a chance to pick it up there. You know, the Ranger recruiter will come by. Same thing if you just have an airborne contract to go to, like, the 82nd Airborne.
Right.
You probably have a chance in airborne school to sign up to go to Ranger Assessment. But either way you get there, after you're done with airborne school, you'll go to a Ranger Assessment and Selection Program, which is an 8-week selection course. You know, it's really like 4 weeks of them just trying to make you quit, and then 4 weeks of some more trying to make you quit with a little bit of training to get you ready for the unit. You graduate that, you'll get assigned to one of the Ranger battalions.
So that's not Ranger school, that's Ranger assessment?
Yep. So that is the selection course run by the 75th Ranger Regiment, and that's what gets you assigned to the unit. And that's what gets you your Ranger scroll. So you'll get the Ranger scroll is the unit insignia of the 75th Ranger Regiment.
Right. Looks like a scroll rolled out with 75th Regiment on it, right? 75th Ranger Regiment.
Yeah, so it'll have a Ranger in the middle, and then on the folds of the scroll, like 1st Battalion, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Battalion, or Special Troops Battalion, whatever unit you get assigned to based on your job and based on luck. But yeah, that's the scroll. So that's what shows that, you know, what we would call you're a real Ranger. You're assigned to the actual Ranger Regiment. You're assigned to Special Operations Command.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to U.S. Army Ranger School, which is, you know, a whole different thing. That's the Army's premier combat leadership course.
Right.
And so that's probably what a lot of people have heard a lot more about. That's a 62-day course. Based out of Fort Benning, Georgia, where you, again, it's focused on teaching combat leadership skills by simulating combat conditions. So you're going to be, you know, you average about 2 hours sleep a night, you're eating one or two meals a day, large field exercises where you cycle through leadership programs. So that's a different thing, even though they're pretty closely related.
It's been in the news a little bit the last couple of years. So the Ranger Regiments, Marine Corps, Infantry, there's the same controversy with women now in those units. And has the Ranger Regiment had a female platoon commander yet?
You know, I can't 100% say for sure. Last I heard, there was a female intelligence officer that passed the Ranger Assessment and Selection Program and was assigned to the unit. I know that she had not, because this is pretty common for intelligence officers, she had not attended Ranger School yet, the Army Ranger School, and so contingent on her assignment is she had to pass that within a certain time frame. Since then, I don't know. I've heard from people connected to the organization currently on active duty that they've simply had trouble getting women at all levels and throughout all MOSs to attend the selection course,
right.
Just getting numbers in the door. But I don't know the current status of that, actually.
Right. I think, let me tell you, if there was one, I think we would have heard about it. And again, it's let me tell you, that just like to be an infantry officer of the Marine Corps, because our infantry officer course takes its same, you know, it's, you need to change your standards, they're unreasonable, it's too much. And we've actually modified the standards under great political pressure that look, if it's too hard, then you need to look at that. And this is that coming on the heels of, we'll never tell you to change your standards, right? They just want the opportunity to serve. Okay. And then it was, first of all, nobody believed that. And I'm not arguing the case. The case is for standards. And so the standards have been what they are for a long time. And so, it's the same controversy, relative to women in these units. Talk to me about, so let's talk about your career. So, I want to tell you a story, kind of a geek story about Rangers. This is me as I was looking for somebody who, would have been in 2001. So it's before September 11th. It's on June 6th, and so it's the anniversary of the Normandy invasion. And I'm looking for somebody who was at Normandy when I doing my radio show up in North Dakota. So I can't find anybody. And so that time of the year, everybody goes to the lake. So you're calling, people are saying, oh, this guy was, call, right? You get nothing. So ultimately, I go on the air and I said, I'm looking for somebody. A woman calls and said, call my father. And I said, okay, what's his name? Well, his name's Harris Holman. And he's from Hatton, North Dakota. So she said, well, he's in an assisted living facility, but he's fine. I said, okay. So I call him. He answers the phone in this thick Norwegian accent. Yeah? And so I introduced myself, and I said, I'm looking to have somebody on my program that was at Normandy. And your daughter gave me your phone number and said you were there. Would you mind coming on and talking about it? He said, oh, no, I will come on. I'll talk about it. And so I said, okay, stay there. Because I was in my office. I had to run down to the studio and start the show. And I said, Harris, what unit were you with? And he said, the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I said, okay. And I hung up the phone. I'm running down the hallway, and I'm thinking, they went up Point Du Hoc that day. And I'm thinking, holy shit. So I get on and I interview this guy, and sure enough, he was a squad leader going up Point Du Hoc that day. And one of my favorite interviews I've ever done in my life, to hear him talk about what it was like to be in the Landycraft off of Normandy, what the beach looked like, what it was like to go up those cliffs. And just a piece of an epic piece of Ranger history that was written, that has been memorialized in some incredible paintings and artwork devoted to the Rangers. But a geeky moment relative to the Rangers in my life. But it's an awesome interview, and I want to say it's in the North Dakota Museum of Military History. The interview is, because it's really cool. Listen to him talk and. How many times he was wounded, but I'm sure did you ever have a chance to meet any of those guys? Your changes of command and different days that you guys do must share some. You guys must have some incredible history walking around.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I've never actually met anybody from the World War II era personally. I know every June 6th we send guys out to conduct ceremonies at Point Du Hoc, you know, because as you said, that's a huge moment in our history. But I've definitely, so every 2 years during the regimental change of command, we have Ranger Rendezvous down in Fort Benning, Georgia. So any of the active duty guys from around the country who aren't currently forward deployed will come into town. They'll usually jump in to the drop zone there in Fort Benning for the weekend. It's a full week into a weekend, and you know for the active duty guys, there's change of command ceremonies, there's regimental PT sessions, there's a ton of interbattalion competitions, you know, everything from MMA and wrestling to soccer and football matches, things like that. Just a lot of friendly competition, but everybody, you know, all the battalion veterans, a lot of people will come into town too. So I've had a chance down there to meet a lot of guys from the Vietnam era LRSC platoons, guys who jumped into Grenada and Panama. Right. So ton of history, and had a chance to serve with some people who jumped into Panama. Even my first sergeant major of the regiment when I was in had jumped into Panama in 1989 as a squad leader, which was, I think when that happened, I was about 4 months old. So that was pretty incredible.
No, it's. I'll tell you what. The Rangers have an incredible history, and for me, it was just still is. You know, he passed away, and but the privilege of a lifetime to get a chance to talk to him. So the interview is me being a geek, and I wish I had done the interview after I'd gone to Iraq and Afghanistan. I would have been a better interview because I would have been more experience in terms of what to ask him, but great interview. Talk to me about your career. So you joined the Rangers. Where do you go? What do you do?
Yeah, so I joined the Rangers, ended up, you know, going through all the training and reporting to my unit late spring in 2011. I was assigned to Charlie Company and 3rd Ranger Battalion. So that was in Fort Benning, Georgia. So I spent my full 4 years rotating between being deployed forward for about 4 to 6 months at a time and then being back conducting training cycles in Fort Benning. I deployed 4 times to Afghanistan, kind of a variety of roles. The cool part about the Ranger Regiment is you're able to get promoted very quickly. If you're squared away, you get to, do a lot of different jobs. So I was a machine gunner on the 240, my first deployment. My next 2 deployments were as a team leader. And then my 3rd deployment was on a reconnaissance team.
Talk to us about, so we're in Afghanistan. I mean, for those of us who served in Afghanistan as Marines, the majority of us spent time down in the south central part of the country in Helmand province. You guys normally are further east and further north than we are. Where were you generally? What were you guys doing?
Yeah, I was pretty scattered around. So I spent time in a couple different deployments in out of Kandahar Airfield. So, different province, but really the same kind of environment as a lot of the Marine veterans will be familiar with. I spent some time way up in the north central northwest up in Mazar-e Sharif. So about half a deployment spent up there. Before moving out there during that same deployment, my 3rd, I was in the Kabul area doing some training with the Afghan Special Forces partnering units that we would bring out. During especially my last couple deployments, pretty much everything we were doing was enabling the Afghani military. So, a typical strike force kind of transitioned from being 80% Americans to 80% Afghani, and a few of us out there to provide extra muscle and some guidance and coordinate some of the air assets for them. But so there was a lot more training emphasis, so we got to spend some time there. And then 1 deployment out east in the Wardak province. So that was more mountainous and cold in the winter rather than the hot summers down south.
When you're asked how is Afghanistan going to turn out, what do you say?
I'm pretty skeptical that things are going to hold together there in the long term. When I think about what our priorities as a country should be, I kind of have a tough time continuing to justify like this long-term presence there, and I don't know how guys on active duty will necessarily feel about hearing that, but, I just, now that I'm on the civilian side, there's so much detachment from it that I worry that we don't have really a clear set of goals. That, that being said, on the same page, if we leave right now, I don't see the government holding together in the long term or without making like serious forced concessions with the Taliban. There also doesn't seem to be any good coordination going on trying to negotiate with them and bring them into the picture. So, I don't know. I worry about it.
Yeah. I think we're doing as well as we can do in that I think we're training them and we're minimizing our casualties, which is significant because I think the American public, is out of patience. I think from a national perspective, it's do we want to walk away from this right now? And I think the 2 years that, almost a year and a half that President Trump has been there and Secretary Mattis has been there, I think Secretary Mattis will not hesitate when he doesn't think that we can prevail to tell the president. I think that he's that guy, and I think he's conscious of history, our involvement in Vietnam, the way that that's turned out. And so, again, I think that minimizing our own casualties is significant to a longer-term presence there. And then I think that with the drawing down of combat activity in Iraq, Syria, and those sorties available to be flown in Afghanistan, I think you've got to make it hurt for the Taliban. I think you've got to kill them and force not the big Taliban that stays in Pakistan, but the little Taliban that is in Afghanistan. I think you have to force, hopefully by killing them, you force them to the negotiating table. And you say, hey, look, you're not going to win this. right? Let's negotiate something that is acceptable to both parties. And I think that's a decent American strategy when the alternative considered we can just walk away. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I do have faith. I served with Secretary Mattis, and I know you can put a gun in his mouth and tell him, okay, you've got to lie now, okay? And he'll look at you and say, pull the trigger. So I believe he's that guy. So keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I definitely have a lot of faith in him, you know, making the right decisions. And I feel like it has been different. There hasn't been the same old, like, yeah, we'll come in and get the job done, no problem, kind of, you know, perpetual cycle of saying, like, this time it'll be different. You know, I just worry that, and this is just a symptom of the big picture and how, you know, everything going on around the world, that if we deprioritize that theater, you know, we're not really doing a good service to our guys there now. We're not doing a good service to the people who have, you know, sacrificed over the last 17 years
right.
in there. I think that we need to, like, put the resources into it, get the job done. You know, obviously the Afghani's doing 90% of the lifting there at this point, but like you said, the end state has to be a negotiated long-term deal between, you know, people in the country who support the current government there and their priorities, and then people who sympathize with the Taliban, because, you know, like it or not, you know, a lot of those views are pretty divorced from, you know, just the international terrorism issues, and like they have to be involved in the long-term future of that country in some way. So I think just getting that negotiated peace has to be the end goal.
You know, it's interesting. I have a friend who worked for USAID and some other OGA agencies that were in Afghanistan, and he said, you know, the legitimacy from the Taliban is derived because it's an agrarian society, and they've been viewed as more honest in land disputes, which are a huge part of the Afghan daily life. When in an agrarian society, land disputes are a big deal. And the Taliban were perceived as, this is him, were perceived as more fair, where, you know, the governors and the provincial officials were considered to be more, you know, completely capable of being bought. And he said, so yeah. If you wonder what the appeal is, he said, I can tell you from the people I interacted with, you know, asking them, why would you want them back? And they said, because they're more fair. They are more fair. And then the problem is, though, that they overplayed their hand with their religious extremism, and the people turned against them. So it's interesting. So you can see where, in an agrarian society, the farmer looks and says, "Look, I don't have it. They didn't mess with me. I don't have too much of a problem with them, you know. But my, you know, I'll deal with whoever's here." So interesting. Afghanistan, not an easy problem to deal with. So anyway,
no, it's such a, it's really more of a patchwork of different tribes, and I mean, people in one valley to the next, even if they're all Pashtun, will be very different people and have different customs. And I think that's a lot of the strength of the Taliban movement is, you know, religious extremism and what we would call illiberal values aside, you know, they've been able to do a better job even operating in the shadows, you know, as an alternative government over the past 17 years at providing things, like you said, like, you know, dispute resolution and, you know, healthcare and, you know, social services and things like that than, you know, our government has because of those corruption issues. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a much more multifaceted issue than just, you know, religious extremism and military tactics.
Exactly. And so, you know, that is an interesting part of the whole Afghanistan thing. And to me, it's a bit of a head scratcher in terms of us deciding to expand the ground war back in 2003, 2004, 2005, that planning session where all the smart guys got together, you know, there wasn't some, I don't know, there was some schmo like me that said, hey, I think your plan is awesome, General, and I think it's totally going to work. However, I got a question for you. does everybody understand that we're going to try to create something that's never been created? There's never been an Afghan nation. This is a, as you said, a patchwork, a quilt of, you know, warlords, tribal elders, right? And that is put together in a loose confederation, and now we're going to try to create greater Afghanistan? And then I know I would have got, hey, who is that guy? That's McNamara, Major Tide. Yeah, we're going to take a break, and just come see me. I'm talking to my aide now. All right, we'll be back. All right, hey, get McNamara's ass out of here. We don't need that, right? And and so we've gone down the road of trying to create something that's never been created in the history of the nation, and it ain't easy. Nation building is hard work, as both Tyler and I can attest to. It ain't easy. So, but keep our fingers crossed that maybe we can force the Taliban to the table and sign a peace agreement that promotes stability, and then Afghanistan can become something it's never been, so which would be good for its people. So anyway, talk about, so you get out, you decided not to make the Army a career. Was that the plan going in, Tyler, that you were gonna get out, or did you have an idea how long you'd stay in?
Oh, no, my plan going in was to just be, you know, total full-time badass as long as I could. Like, total no shit. I was going to do my time there. I was going to go to some, you know, special mission unit selection and do that whole thing. But, you know, didn't end up being the path. I blame my wife for a lot of that. You know, she kind of settled me down. We got married about 6 months before I got out of the Army. And it's kind of like, well, I could do all that, you know, or I could do this other thing. So, you know, definitely for the better, you know, in my personal opinion. But
so, where is she? Is she a North Carolina girl? Where'd you meet your wife?
No, I actually knew her before I got into the Army. Whoa. So, knew her for like 6 years. You know, we were close, but we weren't close enough to make it weird when we started dating. She can tell the story a lot better than I can. She loves telling it, but you know, eventually we found ourselves both to be single once when I was home on leave and started dating. Only dated for like 9 months before we got married, and then during that time we decided that I was going to get out, and then right after we got married I did one more short deployment to Afghanistan and came home and got out and moved back home to Minnesota.
Wow, listen to that. Minnesota boy does good. So you get out, and then what year did you get out?
I got out in January of 2015, came home, and I started school at a Catholic private college here in St. Paul, Minneapolis, or St. Paul, Minnesota, called St. Thomas. So
St. Paul, for those of you who don't know, is a really cool city. It has a lot of great bars. If you ever want to go to a fun place on St. Patrick's Day, it's a good place to go to. If you ever want to go to a great hockey venue, the XL Energy Center in St. Paul is awesome to go watch hockey. And so I would recommend it. So I'm a fan of St. Paul, in case you can't tell.
Yeah, oh, yeah. How can you not be? I'm much more of a St. Paul person than I am a Minneapolis person. You know, Minneapolis is the big cosmopolitan city, one of the two twin cities. And then St. Paul is like the, you know, it still feels like it probably did in the 1920s, you know, the kind of Irish roots. Not a lot of big buildings, cool local places. So, yeah, St. Paul's a great place. So moved back. My wife and I lived in St. Paul for a couple of years while I was finishing college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. My degree is actually in physics. And then I got out and started working in the digital marketing industry. So kind of all over the place.
A little bit. Physics, yeah. Really? Yeah. Why physics? How'd you choose that?
Well, I've always been a math guy, you know, and then I was taking classes my first semester back, took a handful of things. I think I was thinking business first, you know, or something general. I took a physics class for a science requirement. Just thought it was cool, had no plan for what I was going to do with it, which is not what I would recommend to transitioning veterans, but that's what I did. I got a physics degree and then realized I didn't want to go get a PhD, especially already being older. And, found a job doing digital marketing analytics for a digital marketing agency.
All right. Tell me how that evolves into the freak, which is what we're going to talk about now.
Yeah. So, I have a few close friends who are, you know, more on the creative side, a lot of authors and journalists in the veteran world. So working for companies like Havoc Journal or what is now NewsRep. And eventually they wanted to kind of branch out and do their own thing and started getting to talking about them, about what it would actually take to start a new organization, and decided that we wanted to do it. We launched The Freak Media earlier this summer. And what The Freak Media is a veteran-owned and operated media organization with really two goals in mind. Number one, focusing internally on the veteran community. We want to highlight and promote veterans who are being successful and giving back to the veteran community and doing good in the community at large. So whether that's veteran nonprofits or individual veterans who are stepping up to serve their country, serve their community, make the world a better place, or whether that's just veteran, you know, authors either reporting on topics or writing creatively, we want to give them a platform to push their views. Goal number two is really directed more out at the American society as a whole. So we want to, you know, we believe deeply, as I'm sure a lot of veterans do, that the veteran community has a lot to offer the country. And when we're working as a team and performing at our best, you know, we really can change the game and raise the thought on a lot of topics. So we want to serve as a platform to really bring veteran thought leadership and veteran perspective to a lot of different views on American culture, whether that's politics or pop culture or just giving our point of view on things like lifestyle, things like fitness and travel. And so really cover a lot of broad topics that are important to society at large.
All right. And you, a friend of ours, Alex Hollings, you know him, right, from SoftRep, now NewsRep. So we have friends in common. Just tell everybody, how do they find The Freak? It's not F-R-E-A-K, by the way.
Frequency. So you can find us at TheFreak, F-R-E-Q, media.com. As well as on social media, so Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. That's where you're going to get a lot of info on our posts as they go live. And, you know, we hope you come and check us out, see what kind of content we have to offer.
All right. So what do you do for the company? Are you an author? Are you one of the guys in management?
Yeah, so I'm both. I own the marketing arm, so you know, pushing our outreach as well as, you know, ensuring our posts get out on social media on time. But then, yeah, I'm also an author. So you know, currently one of the pieces that I'm working on is highlighting veteran candidates in the upcoming midterm elections, you know, specifically those running in contentious toss-up races, as well as, you know, writing on just some other creative and lifestyle topics as they become interesting to me. So you'll definitely see a bunch of content up on the site from me, as well as some other more well-known veteran authors that you'll recognize from other outlets.
Got it. Tell us about, I saw your name attached to an article entitled The Federalist, Essays That Shaped America.
Yeah. So that's a series that I'm just starting up. You know, with everything going on right now, how, you know, factionalized politics are, and with the recent Supreme Court nomination, you know, highlighting the judicial branch and not just a partisan way, but, just, you know, really just in general, was doing just some thinking about, you know, American history and what our foundational core beliefs always have been. I've also just been on a little bit of my own personal reading and American history kick right now, so thought I would do a little bit of a deep dive into some really influential documents. You know, a lot of people are fairly fluent with or have some basic knowledge about things like the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. But when I think back to my civics classes in high school, back when they actually offered those things more widely, no one ever really talked about the Federalist Papers and how really influential they become. So, introduction piece is out right now. In the next few weeks, we're going to be highlighting a handful of really influential essays from The Federalist, which is a collection of essays that have formed the basis of thought for, you know, illuminating what the founders were thinking about as far as, you know, protecting the democracy from hyper-factionalized politics, as well as, you know, the role of the judicial branch in our government.
I love that kind of stuff. I know it makes me sound like a dork because you just sounded like a dork yourself. But
oh, yeah.
To me, those are the source documents that if you want to be smart and have an informed opinion in a day and age where the average person looks at a story for 15 to 18 seconds before they shit can it, these are the kind of essays that I enjoy. Because I think that the future of the country, and this is why I think more veterans need to serve, we understand service. We understand compromise. We understand what it is to put the country before your political party and yourself. We come from that. And so, to me, the nation needs us in a lot of different ways, but they specifically need us in state capitals, on city councils, in the nation's capital, to do those kind of things. To say, no, I'm not afraid to do the right thing. The right thing here is to compromise. Let's compromise. Let's get something done. Let's push the ball further down the road, and let's end this sequestration stuff. Let's end this budget's not being passed. Let's end all this stupid stuff. And I think veterans are incredibly needed by the country. And so I commend you on that. And these kind of essays are, in my opinion, things that the nation needs to read. So they do have informed opinions about the way we got here as a nation. And for instance, when you hear somebody like Hillary Clinton say, we need to do away with the Electoral College. And it's such an archaic thing. Well, the Electoral College is a compromise that you see throughout our system between the populated states and the not-so-populated states. How would we share power? How would that balance out? And you see this redundant in our former government, and reading things like this are what makes you smart about that. So I commend you for doing that, because a lot of people won't go near this. Hey, we want this business to go. What sells? And here's a question. In a day and age when we see the Jerry Springer show, a glorified version of the Jerry Springer show every night on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. The craziest clickbait, the craziest stuff you watch, the most shrill voices. How do you make the freak go with content like the Federalist Papers? What is the concept to make the freak go? How do you resist making a living in the eye candy that sends websites to the top?
Yeah, so, I mean, number one, it's just discipline. You know, we definitely want to take really strong care, even those of us who are pretty, you know, or what we like to think about being centered and rational in our personal beliefs, you know, try to keep that to a minimum in the writing or where it's, you know, only where it's appropriate. But so a lot of discipline in the content that we host on the site. And
you know, Tyler, I don't have any problem with opinion, but you know what I mean? Can it be articulate? Can it be well thought and well spoken? Because that's what's missing, in my opinion, in the country. It's like, look, I don't want to hear, you know, I lamented on Monday that after the craziness last week in the American Senate around the Kavanaugh nomination, where would I go on Sunday to listen to measured, articulate discourse? And there wasn't any place to go because Tim Russert's dead, the old moderator of Meet the Press, who was awesome at that. So where do you go for that kind of discourse? And so to me, it's not a question of, you know, airing your views. It's can you do it in an articulate, respectful way that accommodates other points of view simultaneously and not it doesn't have to be so in your face and burn it down and so shrill.
Yeah, and you know, I think too is, you know, it's there's a place to have content where you're laying out the facts,
right?
You know, and there's a place to have measured fact-based opinion, but you know, another way that not just sensationalist clickbait things on mainstream media nowadays, but another way the mainstream outlets kind of lose sight sometimes is that they make it hard on the reader to know when you're going from fact into opinion and what you can really count on to be true and what you can't. And so, you know, hoping to be able to like clearly draw that line, as well as, you know, we just generally have faith that because our audience is the veteran audience who, believes in service and wants to do what's right for the country, that, you know, whether you're on the right or the left, you know, whatever your personal views are on any issues, that, if there's any population around the country that can understand and appreciate a more measured viewpoint, help elevate that one, it's the veteran one.
I don't disagree with you, but the trend in modern media is more shrill, more crazy, and more of it. You know, I mean, to today, I wrote a little piece that said, in fact, I'll read you the headline. News and commentary, : death-defying weather reporters in Florida, WTF is wrong with TV networks. So you see, so now that we're done with Brett Kavanaugh, we've got Hurricane Michael coming up, and now we've got these crazy weather reporters standing out in 100-mile-an-hour winds. So we can watch that? So we can watch that one, at some point one of them take something off the head and be killed? But that's the media world that you guys launched the freak in. I just find it interesting. So, Tyler, expand on your content decision, because you guys are certainly swimming against the tide of our current media, which is driven by clickbait, crazy video, over the top stories. I applaud you. Again, you talked about knowing your market, which tends to be veterans, and knowing what they want. Tell me a little bit about more that decision, because it's got to be a hugely conscious decision on your part, yes?
Yeah, it's definitely a conscious decision. So, I mean, it would be easy to just jump in and go with the way the trend is going and, you know, generate followers and get views and generate ad revenue based off of that, but that's not really the point of what we're trying to do, and we're trying to offer an alternative, and, you know, it's not... It's about knowing our audience, but it's also about knowing what is really what the need is, you know, both for the veteran community and for the country as a whole.
All right. So talk to everybody about give them some of the things that you guys intend to do with the freak going forward. So if you right now you have on there in fact headings military, culture, travel, tech, analysis, creative videos, and creative, and then another column called videos. Talk to us. So what is the freak going to become? You stood it up. Where are you guys headed with your content?
Well, our current priority is really to start highlighting all of some veterans who are doing really good work for the veteran community. So, you know, we're going to be out. I think you can see on our site, we're going to be out at Vet Expo down in Dallas, Texas at the end of the month. And so that's going to be a great opportunity to bring what's going on there and some of the great work that some of these nonprofits are doing in our community to help transitioning veterans more to the forefront, and hopefully out to a civilian audience as well. So highlighting, so that's a specific example, but highlighting work like that is kind of on our radar. We also want to continue with some of the work that you'll recognize our authors are bringing in from other outlets they've been involved in. And so, you know, highlighting issues like human trafficking and doing some more deep investigative journalism around topics like that aren't reported on as much in the mainstream because of the effort they take.
Right.
Is something we definitely want to highlight.
All right. So are you going to get on board with post-traumatic winning?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great example of something to highlight, right? You know, you're doing a lot of great thinking and leadership in that area, and really trying to, you know, what you're trying to do, empowering veterans to move through that transition and improve their lives and improve the lives of the people around them. That's exactly the kind of message that we're trying to promote, and exactly what we're trying to bring with our platform.
Yeah, honestly, it's not honestly what I set out to do. I set out to create a forum to a broadcast forum and I wound up being a multimedia company, not too different from you, but you guys are more focused on prose than podcasting, that would speak to veterans, talk about mental health issues. And then out of that, and out of the 2.5 years I've been doing it, has come a knowledge and seeing these things that if you link this stuff together, it works like this. And that door, that black door of trauma that opens up, whether you be in the military or not, that door opens up, and if you can get a mentor, there's actually a path through that door that takes you to a greater life. And first of all, you got to get your hands around the experience. Second of all, if you begin to help others, these lemons get turned into this incredibly beautiful lemonade. And so it's not what I set out to do, which is kind of interesting, but I believe in it because I interviewed a mother this morning who talked about her son and coming back from Iraq and the spiral he was in. And then he started listening and he heard the gospel of post-traumatic winning. And she said, well, what's going on with you? And he told her, you should. And so she started listening, and I got one of the coolest emails I've ever received from a mom. And so, talking about how the work I was doing impacted their family, and God bless me, and that I hope I understood that I was creating a tsunami in terms of how people look at this and how people help other people, and I was blown away. So you need to get on board, man. Come on.
I'm definitely on board. Yeah, no, I think it really speaks to a lot of my personal experience and experience I've heard from friends and colleagues who went through the same transition, where it's really about, you know, finding that mission that's oriented outside of yourself and being able to feel empowered to deal with your issues in that greater context. So
which is quintessentially our culture, right? The warrior culture. That's the warrior culture view of the planet. And all of a sudden, I don't know, something gets screwed up and I have an inward focus now. What? You know, it's not really me. It's not my tribe. It's not me coming home. And so, again, there's very little original thought in it. I think wiring certain things, pieces together and saying, well, if this, then you can do that. There's a certain amount of that's innovative. But I find it exciting because, you know, people like you, Tyler and I spoke about a week ago, they get it so fast because it is so much a part of the way they've lived their life. And that's what's cool about it. So, no, so I hope we can do something together and really look forward to it. You've been gracious enough with your time. What haven't I asked you about the freak that you want people to know, Tyler?
Well, you know, I just want people to know where we are. Again, that's the freak, freqmedia.com, and we, really just want people to come see what we're all about, and I think that it won't be a hard decision to decide for yourselves, you know, the kind of media you want to be exposed to.
You know, again, I'm a fan of just of what I've seen. I got introduced by to the freak by Alex Hollings, who comes on the program, and he told me the background of the guys that were doing it, which made me more curious because I've seen their work in combat, and they as a body have, as I said, they have great reputation in combat as doing everything that the professional does. So when he mentioned it, I went and checked it out, and the content spoke to me. It was smart person content, and so I've enjoyed it so far. I hope that and what I'm hoping is that I would love to have your authors on a regular basis and talk about the things that you're doing relative to the veteran community, what you find interesting, what you've covered, and bring you guys on All Marine Radio if that's all right with you.
Yeah, we would love to do that. I think that's a really great idea. And again, it's always hard for members of our community to speak about themselves being part of that ethos that you mentioned, you know, a couple of minutes ago. But you know, if we can let our work and our reputations speak for ourselves, I think that's where you're going to find the value. And so, yeah, we appreciate it.
All right. Tell everybody one more time, how do they find The Freak?
That's TheFreak, F-R-E-Q, media.com. And then you can find us on social media as well.
There you have it. All right. And you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, all those things?
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
There you have it. All right. His name is Tyler. He's a he's former United States Army Ranger, last name by the name of Jones, and the media company is called The Freak, F-R-E-Q, as in frequencies, and you can find them online at thefreakmedia.com. Tyler, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it, and it won't be the last time we have you on All Marine Radio, so I appreciate the visit today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, Mike. Thank you.
There you have it. All right. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Readboard page at allmarineradio.com.